When we think of Martin Luther, we typically picture the young, defiant monk nailing his 95 theses to Wittenberg's castle church door. Or perhaps the bold reformer standing before Emperor Charles V at the Diet of Worms, declaring, "Here I stand, I can do no other." These are the dramatic moments that history remembers, the theological equivalent of action movie highlights. But what happened when the revolutionary settled down, got married, and had to figure out how to live with the consequences of having turned the world upside down? The answer is both more mundane and more fascinating than one would expect. The later Luther was a complex figure, part devoted family man, part grumpy theologian, part university administrator, and occasional part cantankerous old man who seemed determined to pick fights with everyone from the Pope to dinner guests. If early Luther was a theological action hero, later Luther was more like a theological sitcom dad. Still principled and passionate, but now dealing with crying babies, university politics, and the persistent problem of how to keep a Reformation going when the initial revolutionary fervor starts to wear off. As we saw in the last episode, Luther's response to Melanchthon's diplomatic approach at the Diet of Augsburg was mixed. On one hand, he appreciated the strategic value of presenting the Lutheran case in reasonable terms. But on the other hand, he worried that Melanchthon was being too conciliatory. In his letters from Coburg Castle, where he was hiding, Luther alternated between praise for his colleague's work and not always gentle reminders to stand firm on essential doctrines. It was the theological equivalent of a coach calling plays from the sidelines while trusting his quarterback to execute them properly. Perhaps the most dramatic personal change in Luther's later years was his marriage to Katharina von Bora in 1525, that we barely mentioned previously. My Katie, as Martin called her, was a former nun who had escaped from her convent, literally, according to some accounts, hidden in a fish barrel. Now, if that sounds like the setup for a romantic comedy, that's not entirely inappropriate. Luther's marriage was both a personal decision and a theological statement. Reformers, he argued, should practice what they preached about the godliness of married life. The match proved to be remarkably successful, though it took some adjustment. Luther, who'd spent most of his adult life as a celibate monk, suddenly found himself learning the complexities of married life. Now, Luther's letters from this period reveal a man genuinely delighted with domestic happiness, but occasionally bemused by its practical challenges. He wrote to friends about his wife's management of their household finances. She was apparently better at it than he was. He wrote about her skill at brewing beer, which was a crucial domestic art in the 16th century Germany, and her firm opinions about everything from theology to dinner menus. Katie, as he called her, proved to be a formidable partner. She managed the Luther household, which included not only their own six children, but also a rotating cast of students, refugees, and visitors who came to hear the great reformer speak. She converted the Augustinian monastery where they lived into something resembling a combination boarding house, seminary, and family home. Modern hospitality experts would be impressed by her logistical skills. Luther's transformation from bachelor professor to family man provided endless material for both his supporters and his critics. His supporters pointed to his obvious happiness and his theological writings about the sanctity of marriage as evidence that reformers were more well-rounded than celibate clergy. But his critics suggested that his marriage proved that he'd abandoned his religious calling for worldly pleasures. Luther himself seemed largely unconcerned with such criticism. He discovered that married life, while different from monastic life, could be just as spiritually meaningful and considerably more pleasant on cold winter nights. The Luther's six children brought both joy and sorrow to their parents' lives. Luther proved to be a devoted father, though his parenting style reflected his theological convictions. He believed in firm discipline combined with genuine affection, and his letters contained touching descriptions of playing with his children, worrying about their spiritual development. The death of his daughter, Magdalena, in 1542 devastated Luther, revealing a tender side that contrasts sharply with his public image as a theological warrior. The aftermath of the Peasants' War haunted Luther for the rest of his life. The rebellion was crushed at no small loss of life. An estimated 100,000 peasants were killed. Luther never officially apologized for his role in encouraging the violence, but his later writings suggest that he wrestled with the consequences of his words. He developed a more nuanced theology of government and social order, acknowledging that while rebellion against legitimate authority was wrong, rulers also had obligations to govern justly and mercifully. This episode of his life reveals one of the central tensions in Luther's later thought: how to balance his commitment to Christian freedom and his need to maintain social stability for reform, which is often perceived by those who resist it as revolution, even rebellion. He'd learned, perhaps too late, that ideas have consequences far beyond their original theological context. The firebrand reformer discovered that revolution, once started, can be difficult to control. Despite the drama of political and personal developments, Luther never stopped being, at heart, a theologian and scholar. The 1530s and the 40s saw him producing some of his most important theological works, including the compilation of his translation of the Bible into German, a project that had lasting impact far beyond his theology. The translation revealed Luther's remarkable linguistic gifts and his deep commitment to making complex ideas accessible to ordinary people. He famously said that his goal was to translate in such a way that, quote, the mother in the home, the children in the street, the common people in the marketplace, unquote, could understand the scriptures. This was revolutionary thinking. The idea that theological truth could be available to everyone and not just the educated clergy was brand new. And during this period, Luther also continued his work as a university professor at Wittenberg. His lectures and disputations in his last years show a mature theologian refining and developing ideas that he'd first articulated in the heat of controversy. He was particularly concerned with systematic presentations of Protestant doctrine, recognizing that the movement needed not just criticism of Catholic teaching, but positive constructive alternatives. His later theological writings also reveal an increasing emphasis on pastoral concerns. Luther had always been interested in practical ministry, but his later works show a man who was deeply concerned with how ordinary Christians could live out their faith in daily life. His sermons from this period are filled with both practical advice about marriage and work and child rearing, community relationships. The revolutionary theologian was becoming something of a Christian, if you could say it, life coach. Now, as Luther entered his 50s, his health declined. He suffered from kidney stones, digestive problems, depression, and various other ailments that left him frequently bedridden and often in intense pain. His letters from the 1540s read like a medical textbook of 16th century maladies, mixed with theological reflections and the occasional complaint about his doctors. Luther's health problems seem to have contributed to what can only be described as an increase in his natural crankiness. He'd never been particularly tolerant of disagreement, but his later years saw him engaging in increasingly bitter controversies with a wide range of opponents. He feuded with other Protestant reformers over theological fine points. He wrote harsh attacks on Catholic opponents and composed some of the most disturbing anti-Semitic writings. This darker side of the later Luther is impossible to ignore or excuse. His 1543 treatise on the Jews and their lies, it contains passages that are shocking in their hatred, would later be cited by Nazi propagandists. Modern Luther scholars have struggled to understand how the same man who wrote so movingly about God's grace and love could also pen such vicious attacks on entire groups of people. Part of the explanation may lie in Luther's increasing sense of urgency as his health declined. He seemed to have believed that the end times were approaching and that all the enemies of the gospel needed to be definitively defeated before Christ's return. This apocalyptic thinking led him to see opposition not just as theological disagreement, but as a kind of cosmic warfare between good and evil. Unfortunately, this perspective made him increasingly unable to distinguish between legitimate criticisms and what he thought of as demonic opposition. His physical discomfort may also have contributed to his mental state. Now, anyone who has dealt with chronic pain knows how it can affect one's patience and judgment. Luther's later writings often seem to be the work of a man in considerable physical and emotional distress, lashing out at perceived enemies with increasing desperation. Luther's final years were marked by continued theological work interspersed with increasing periods of illness. He remained active as a professor and preacher almost unto the end, but his energy was clearly declining and everyone saw it. His last sermons, preached in early 1546, they show a man still passionate about his message but physically exhausted from decades of controversy and overwork. In February of 1546, Luther traveled to Eisleben, his birthplace, to help mediate a dispute between local nobles. The journey was difficult for the aging reformer, but he felt obligated to help resolve the conflict. On February 17th, after successfully completing the mediation, Luther became seriously ill, and he died early the next morning, February 18, 1546, at the age of 62. Luther's final words, according to witnesses, were a response to the question of whether he died steadfast in Christ and the doctrine that he had preached. "Yes," he replied in German, and then repeated it in Latin, "Yes." It was a fitting end for a man who had spent his life insisting on the importance of clear, definitive statements of faith. News of Luther's death spread quickly throughout Europe. For his supporters, of course, it was the loss of an irreplaceable leader who changed the course of Christian history. For his opponents, it was, of course, perhaps the hope that the Protestant movement would lose momentum without its most charismatic spokesman. For his family, it was simply the loss of a husband and a father who, despite his public controversies, had been a devoted and loving family man.